Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Jan Thornhill, an award-winning children's author and illustrator. Now, you were telling us how wonderful the illustrations are in Kyle Goes Alone, and indeed they were, but you are an illustrator too, as well as a writer, and apparently you've developed a new method of illustration for your new book, The Tragic Tale of the Great Auk, to be published by Groundwood Books this fall. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, I did it on computer, basically, using a program called Painter. It's the first book that I've illustrated in 15 years, and the reason for that was because of pain, I couldn't draw anymore, and then eventually it was discovered that the pain was being caused by a tumor growing in my arm, a rare cancer. And I've had fairly extensive surgery, and I have some limitations at this point. So it's taken me a while to figure out how to make art again. Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted to say that I have worked it out on the computer. I use a stylus and a tablet, and the program is called a natural media program, which means that you sort of draw with a stylus on the tablet, and you can produce any sort of line on the computer, any type of paint, textured backgrounds, to use chalk, and it's extraordinary. It doesn't look like it's been done on a computer at all.
Yeah, but I guess the advantage is you can save it at various stages and
absolutely,
you know, and go over the top if you need to, or go back to an earlier version and start that bit again. Or
yes,
whatever.
And it's infinitely correctable. Mm-hmm. And I no longer have to worry about drinking my paint water and putting my brush into my coffee, which I did for many years.
Oh, that's funny. Can you tell us a little maybe about the illustrations in The Great Auk? Like, I have them here in front of me for listeners, and they are extremely detailed. So it's hard to imagine doing that on a stylus. Do you?
Well, basically, I work high resolution, and because I don't have the same control I used to have with my hand, I work very close up, and I basically just sort of scribble close up, and then when you go back and look at
size. So you're not working on something the size of a page. You can take a little piece of it and blow it up.
Yes, way close up.
Very clever. But I guess you have to keep making it small again to see that you've got it all in proportion and everything else. Well, they are fabulous illustrations. Very sad story, of course, but...
It is a sad story. I presented it to the publisher, Groundwood Books, saying that this could be the most depressing book ever written for children, but I'm going to try to make it not that depressing.
Well, I look forward to it. Now, you're also publishing a concept book for younger children with Owl Kids, and this one is not illustrated by you, but by Jackie Lee. Maybe explain first, what is a concept book?
An ABC alphabet book is a concept book, so it's not really a story, it's not really nonfiction. A book about colors would be a concept book. And this book is called I Am Josephine, and I Am a Living Thing. It's unbelievably simple. It starts with, I am Josephine, and I am a human being. And then you turn the page, and Josephine says, I am a human being, and so is my mom, and so is my dad, and so is my little brother. That's a street scene. And then you turn the page, and you see people from all around the world, and these are all people, too. Human beings, too. The next page is, I am Josephine, and I am a mammal.
Okay.
And then we go to, I'm a mammal, and so is my mother, and so is my little brother, and so is the dog, and so is a sheep. And then we turn the page again, and there's all kinds of different mammals from around the world. And it goes that way through animals, and then through living things. And at the end, Josephine says, I am a human being, I am a mammal, I am an animal, and I am a living thing, but I am the only Josephine.
Oh, cute.
So it's very simple, and the illustrations are absolutely delightful.
Yeah, but they're all science concepts, right?
Yes. So it's amazing how many kids don't actually know that they're an animal. I visit school kids all the time, and I've had some battles with grade ones. No, I am not an animal, I am a human being. And I go, you are both.
And sometimes you are only one, and it isn't a human being.
Yes.
Okay, so Though you used to write short stories, I know the focus of your writing for adults has definitely changed. And now you have a beautiful blog site. So what do you write about and what do you share there?
I write about my obsession, which is wild fungi and slime molds. I spend a lot of time in the woods, and I used to be a very avid bird watcher. I still watch birds, but mushrooms have taken over. The birds were fantastic until I had seen pretty well all of the local birds, and now I watch their behavior, but identifying, I know them by sound, I know them all, but going to the woods and looking for fungi is a treasure hunt that will never end.
Right.
In the 25 years since I've been doing it, I've identified, you know, probably at least 1,000 species in my neighborhood.
Wow.
And I'm never going to run out.
No.
Because almost every time I go into the woods, I find something I have never seen before.
And despite their name, fungi and slime mold and all that, they're actually beautiful. My husband and I also sometimes go through the woods mushroom hunting and what have you, and I love the tiny little ones that you can't eat, but you can certainly admire and just wonder at the brilliance of their colors and things. They're fabulous.
Little eyelash cups. Yeah. Little red cups with little black eyelashes all around the rim. Mm.
So do you photograph them and put them on your site?
I do. I research some fairly rare finds I've found and talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got a lot of photographs.
Yeah. What is the site called?
It's called Weird and Wonderful Wild Mushrooms.
Oh.
I think if you just blog my name, Jan Thornhill, you will
It'll
get
come
to
up.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I will go and check it out for sure. Perhaps you could read to us a little more from...
I'd love to read a little bit from The Tragic Tale of the Great Auk.
Yes.
So the Great Auk was basically the northern penguin. There were millions of them. And the last ones were killed in 1944. They were killed for a collector who was going to sell them to a museum to stuff, which is how most of the last birds met their end,
so
because
sad.
They knew they were going extinct. As the great auk evolved into a lethal fisher, not only did its wings shrink, but its feet also gradually moved farther and farther back on its body. Having its feet so close to its tail was a perfect place to use them as a rudder. It was not, however, a very useful position for getting around on land. When the great auk struggled out of the water onto a rocky shore, it could only toddle along awkwardly in a fully upright position, so awkwardly that one of its earliest English names was the Wobble. So why didn't the Wobble avoid land entirely? The answer is simple. Birds can't lay their eggs in water. The great auk had no choice. Once a year, it had to clumsily hop out of the sea onto the rocky ledge of its berth, where it searched out its life partner. Once reunited, the couple rubbed their beaks together and nibbled each other's necks. Then they mated. Not long afterwards, the female, wedged upright between innumerable other nesting auks, laid a single egg on bare rock. Both parents took turns brooding this precious egg, the only one they would produce all year, cradling it between their feet to keep it warm. Unlike most other birds' eggs, each great auk egg had markings that were distinctly different from any other auk's eggs, a handy way for each pair to recognize its own. A month and a half later, the chick, covered in fluffy gray down, would crack through the shell. Fed a constant supply of fish by both parents, in less than 2 weeks it would be big enough to leave the rookery. Led to the water's edge, it would dive for the first time into its true home, the frigid waters of the North Atlantic. At least 5 long years would pass before this fledgling would feel rock beneath its feet again, when it and all the others that attached alongside it would finally be old enough to find a mate for itself. For a mature great auk, spending almost 2 months ashore each year was a necessity, but it was a dangerous necessity. On land, it had no defense against the hungry jaws of wolves and foxes and polar bears. A puffin can hunker down in its burrow. A tern can dive bomb an interloper and peck its skull with its pointed beak. A goose can cause serious damage to an attacker with its wings and bill, or it can simply fly away. But all a flightless great auk could do when danger threatened was to try to reach the safety of the sea, pathetically running towards the water about as fast as you can walk. There was nothing it could do to defend an egg or chick except angrily clack its beak. How then did it so successfully raise its young for millennia? It chose to nest in hard-to-get-to places, shorelines protected by looming cliffs, or small rocky islands or headlands surrounded by swirling currents, isolated places that carnivorous mammals couldn't reach. So for many years it thrived. But then, out of the blue, a new class of predator arrived, a class of clever hunters that, like the great auk, walked upright. Our humanoid ancestors.
Oh dear.
Well, I go on to talk about the great auk's use by Stone Age people, the Inuit, Beothuk of Newfoundland, and then eventually the Europeans came and began the main slaughter. But they were actually, what the tragedy of the great auk is what spurred the conservation movement. And
well, so something
prompted,
good did come
prompted
out of
the
it.
First conservation laws. So there are the end of the book is very hopeful. It's a cautionary tale.
Well, many thanks to Jan for coming in today. We've been speaking with Jan Thornhill, who's been telling us about her children's books and her illustrations. Where can listeners buy your books?
As they say, at better bookstores everywhere, or The Great Auk, and you know, most of my books are available on Amazon, and The Great Auk and Josephine are both available for pre-order on Amazon as well.
Great. And listeners, if you would like to connect with us, please visit our website, www.wordonthehills.com, and leave us a comment or a suggestion for whom we might interview in future programs. Also, at our website, you'll find all the programs archived, so you can listen to them anywhere and anytime. Please join us again next week. Thanks for tuning in, right here on Northumberland 897 Truly Local Radio.